All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be with you. My name is Paul Buskis, and sometimes before a presentation, I like to do what I call an icebreaker. An icebreaker is just a way of introducing yourself in quick fashion and associating something that is sacred to you or something in nature. So one of my favorite icebreakers is, and you have two choices. There's no wrong answer. We're going to be talking a little bit about water today. So if you could raise your, when it comes to you, raise your hand, or when it comes to your name, just say your name and say whether, if you were a great body of water, would you be a great lake or a mighty river? Okay, I come from the banks of the Mississippi. I'm from St. Louis originally. So I would say, my name is Paul. I'm from St. Louis, and I am a mighty river. And believe me, there could be all sorts of different reasons why you're a mighty river. But we can leave it at that, or if you have a couple of quick thoughts to say why, that would be great. But let's just go around the room. So, mighty river.
I'm Bill, and I currently live on the banks of the Mississippi. And I am a mighty river. Not because of that, because I embrace the change, even though the mighty river might look the same. It's always changing. It's always a different thing moving by.
Thank you. You, sir.
I'm Carl from Shelton, Washington, but grew up in Chicago, so I'm a mighty lake, Lake Michigan.
Great lake indeed.
I'm Meredith, and I also live in Chicago, and Lake Michigan is pretty important to me. I am definitely a great lake.
I'm Jennifer, and I think I would put myself as a lake.
Fair enough.
Georgia from Tillamook, Oregon. Retired there 7 years ago, and I think of myself as a peaceful lake.
Judy, and I would be a river, but not so mighty.
Okay.
Something a little quieter to camp on.
All right.
Diane from Newcastle, Washington, and I'm probably more of a stream.
Okay.
Even littler.
Even littler.
All right. Well, that works.
I'm Ray, and I'm from Newcastle, sir. And I think I would be a Puget Sound or salt water, because it does change with the tides.
Okay.
And I like the smell.
So you're sort of a hybrid.
Salt air.
You're sort of a hybrid. So you're
yeah.
A great lake with salt in it.
I was born in Wallace, Idaho, and we had the polluted Coeur d'Alene River coming through there. Mm-hmm. They called the Lead Creek. But it's changed now. It now has trout in it.
Oh, nice. Very nice. It's a good
they refurbished it.
Oh, that's great.
My name's Lois, and actually I grew up in Minnesota in a little town. We had the state of, 10,000 lakes, and
uh-huh.
We had a lot of lakes around our area. We could just walk to. But I live in Renton now, and near Lake Washington.
Excellent. So you're going with the Great Lake?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. In the back.
I'm Dennis, from Oregon. I suppose I'm a river.
Okay.
I'm Diane. I'm also from Oregon. I'm another one of those hybrids, dammed up Spokane, Lake Roosevelt.
All right, so you're like really on the bubble. Excellent.
Kathy?
Kathy,
I'm
yes.
I'm not a water fan.
No.
I like to watch the ocean. We're from Edgewood, Washington.
Okay.
And I'm Dave, and like I said, we spend a lot of our spare time when we can at the ocean beach.
Hmm.
Place. So, and it's the tide is always changing the things there every time you go.
So it sounds like you're taking properties from both. You're taking the changing nature of the river, as Bill was saying. But you like that beach. You like to be on that edge of something grand. Yes.
My name's Derry, and I'm from Portland.
Uh-huh.
And I'd be a high mountain river.
I'm Jen, and I'm also from Portland. And
I'm Craig from the Portland area, and if it be a river or lake, I like the canoe.
Okay, all right. Well, I like to start out like that because I think if we're already placing ourselves in creation and in our relationship. Clearly there's a relationship, as you're identifying with one, though, there's a relationship with nature. Today, more so than yesterday, we're talking more about the relationship that we have between faith, nature, and sustainability. Before we go too much further, I want to just say a couple of things that I said yesterday, because they're sort of foundational. The Sacred Parks Project was something that began as a project in seminary, my last semester in seminary, to solidify an environmental studies emphasis on my master's in divinity. And so the only way I knew how to do that was to connect to something that I had relationship with, and that was my experience in the parks, specifically national parks, but not exclusively, and specifically with the desert. Though not exclusively, many of the lessons that God has taught me about the outdoors and about sustainability and about life, survival, all of the above, have been in Zion National Park, and some of the experiences I had. I relayed a couple of stories. The super cliff notes is that. I taught myself how to backcountry hike a year and a half ago in Zion in the winter, because I wanted to go to Zion in the winter. And the desert in the winter is a spectacular thing in the American Southwest, and well, technically the Great Basin. But as I was doing that, I realized that I had brought way too much with me, for one. Has anyone in here brought way too much on their back? Okay. And even though I had packed the appropriate things and then more, I still needed to be taught that survival in the wilderness is something that is a total body experience, and it's something that informs how we live our lives outside of the parks. And so I got caught up on a mountain blizzard in Zion, and was worried if I was going to get down, and had to strategically leave 20 pounds behind in order to get back down, because it the conditions were so such that I couldn't carry everything that I brought up. And I told the ranger, somebody from last time I talked to you said, well, you know, should be leaving stuff on the trail in the park. I said, you're right. I forgot to include that. I did tell the ranger exactly where I put the stuff, and he laughed at me. But leaving things behind, or I should say, packing with more than we need, has a justice element to it, or injustice element, I should say. So that was the beginning of the project. Learning to let go of the things that were keeping me from going where I needed to go, at the speed that I needed to go, and being able to translate that into life outside of a park. How many of us have that storage facility, or that garage, or that attic, with a bunch of stuff that you're never going to use? Okay? Could those things be used by other people? Would that mean we're not using that space appropriately? Or whatever the case may be. I think those are challenging, provoking questions. And there were other stories, but I think we're going to dive into a different aspect. Yesterday we talked about faith and nature in sort of a narrative, along the lines of what I was talking about with the story in Zion, but in other ways. We talked about what is sacred parks. I'm just going to touch on that a little bit today. Why do you care? Well, we did talk about that. I hope you do care. So we'll breeze through that a little bit. But today is most of what are we going to do about it? How are we going to choose to reframe where we are in context of our relationship with places that we think are sacred? So what is sacred parks? Really quick, the mission. It's about mission of living in relationship with places outside of parks the way that we live with creation inside of them, essentially. I'll show you the mission statement quickly. A narrative and experience. People with creation in the ordinary. I was saying yesterday, I'm kind of obsessed with the definition of ordinary, because I really don't know what that means. You talk about extraordinary, you think of the Grand Canyon, oh, that's extraordinary. But if you had to live inside the Grand Canyon, if you were stranded or if you were backcountry, you would quickly be downshifting or upshifting into the ordinary. How do you get by? How do you subsist? Okay. And then transformation through, and this is what we're going to talk about mostly today, faith, nature, and sustainability. So the mission, faithfully exploring and living simply in community with our nation's parks. Looking at life through the lens of adventure. And Barbara talks about hope. So if I were to use what I think is a synonym for hope, I would say the opposite of fear is not love only, or not hope only, but it is adventure. When we look at the problems that we are facing on this globe with food shortages, climate change, all of these things, if we look at them through the lens of adventure and see things as we would as we are in the wilderness, it might be easier to get out of the woods, so to speak. Living simply, this is preaching to the choir at Holden. I mean, living simply so that others may simply live in community with our nation's parks. I think there should be sort of a comma right there in community, okay, with our nation's parks. And then the tagline that's on the quote-unquote business cards, becoming faithful stewards beyond park borders. So that's mostly what I'm going to say from yesterday. That's a little bit of a recap. I always like in a tagline if there's a mystery word. And the mystery word is beyond. Because you can live, like, you can have this awesome experience in the park. But most folks, when they leave the park, it's what? Business as usual, right? It's back to overconsumption. It's back to not conserving. It's back to all this stuff. So if we're stewards in the park, and we internalize that, much like we internalize that here in Holden, we have to compost. If we internalize that beyond the park borders, beyond the sacred place borders, then I think we're getting somewhere. I think we're coming out of a relationship and we're being inspired by a place that God inspired us. So, narrative experience, I just talked about the tent that got away. The tent was one of the things that I had to let go of. Sadly, to get back down the mountain. I had a Job moment in the Everglades where I thought it'd be a good idea. These are my two don't do this, don't try this at home, freshman mistakes. Try to take a canoe out into the Everglades by myself, which I would have been fine if I had a kayak. I had a colleague that did that, but I also would have been fine if I didn't go into an open channel. So I got in a spot where the wind just whipped me around, and I couldn't go anywhere. And I'm in the middle of the Everglades, so with Leviathan here, as the Book of Job would call this alligator, somewhere out there, I had to get out and walk my boat for a while through water about this deep, and that was one of the scariest experiences of my life. And that's when I realized a lesson that I was never taught anywhere else. I'm not the center of the universe. That was last year I found that out. So 37 years after birth, that's a good time, I guess, to figure that out. I am not in control. It is so easy now. In the Book of Job, it presents the alligator and the hippopotamus, as scholars say, as if humankind can't conquer them. But of course we can now with all our modern weaponry. That wouldn't be too big of a, if you had the right equipment. But I didn't have the right equipment to take on one of these guys.
Are you the one that cut the alligator's tail off? It looks like he's
We'll talk later. No, it's just bent. This is like a little pocket camera, so I don't have quite the clarity on that. But yeah, I did take that picture actually with a little bit of help from my Zoom. This spot is left for your story, and we'll talk about that later. In seminary, they like to do this systematic way of talking about story. It's my story, it's your story, and it's our story. And so by the end of the week, especially by Friday, I would like to really dive into what your story is and then what our story is together, because I'm clearly starting off with mine. Okay, I have to tell you, there's some elephants in the room. And because elephants are big, it's hard to spatially have more than one. But we're going to try to talk about these two elephants. One is, from yesterday, I tried to be mindful of what people are giving me feedback from day to day. And the critique was the narrative approach may seem heavy on the individual, not just me, but on you. So the my story, if we stop there, your experience in the wilderness, your experience like as, you know, being a mighty river or a great lake, if we stop there, then it is. It's heavy on the individual, light on the community, light on the action. And so we could talk about personal story, we could reframe that as what Luther calls cheap grace, which is, okay, we're saved, we don't have to do anything, business as usual, right? So that's an elephant in the room that we'll definitely be addressing by the end of the week and a little bit today. This is the one that I don't think anybody has figured out. So I want to really dive into it as much as we can today. The green movement, and I just said made that up, the green efforts, like other movements, should have a mechanism for downshift or transition that is palatable and achievable in the new economical environmental realities. For example, living more simply, these kinds of things, and hopefully a solution that is voluntary. Okay, I hear, we all hear all these theories, and I love to hear them, but at the end of them, I don't know about you, but I'm always thinking, how's this going to work? How is this going to happen? Is there going to be a situation where our denial gets to the point where suddenly we have haves and have-nots, and then everybody's done for themselves? Okay, I feel that's the way we're going. And that's why I want to like rewind to the beginning of that discussion and reframe it in the context of relationship, in the context of inspiration. And I was going to say this later, but it's not on the tip of my tongue now. I think it was Einstein that said innovation is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration, right? I want to turn the tables on that. I'm not saying Einstein was wrong. I'm not going to go up against him. But I will say that in this philosophy, the Sacred Parks Project philosophy, I think we need to create 99% inspiration as a reservoir for us. Because when it gets hard to make the decisions to compost or to recycle or to do these things that are going to hit us in the pocketbook, we need something to draw on. We need something emotionally, spiritually to draw on, and it can't be 1%. It's not gonna work. We need to help other people create relationships in sacred places and then let their appreciation of nature come out of that experience. Does that make sense? Okay. Sorry, Einstein. So, people with creation in the ordinary. Okay, these are just some thoughts that I had to try to get a jump start on answering these questions. We're gonna break up into small groups here in just a second. People with creation in the ordinary is one of the little bits of sacred parts. Giving us not a function of privilege. That's not entirely true, but what I can say about going to some nonprofit director workshops these last few months as a director of sacred parts, I know that 80% of the big gifts come from 20% of the population. That rule, the 80-20 rule, is alive and well. And we really need that. But what I'm saying is you would be shocked to know how many people out there who have very little money are giving very much of themselves. So it's their time, their money, their gifts. So whether people give is not really related to their wealth. We probably all know that, but I think that's good to point out, because people say, well, you know, all of this, the wilderness stuff, that's great, but I can't get out there. Well, why can't we help get people out into the wilderness? Why can't we help create that inspiration? You know, there are entire movements about like trying to get kids outside instead of playing video games, and no child left inside, all these types of things. The gospel of accumulation becomes part of our secondary wiring. I don't know that accumulation is actually part of our hard code wiring. It might be. It might be part of that greed, you know, that we all have. You know, oh, I've got to have that instead of borrowing it from my neighbor. I got to have that. I want instant access. We need top. Okay, this is top down and grassroots effort. I'm not under any false pretenses that if we all individually decide that we're going to compost, that the world is going to just become greener overnight. But without that, you won't have people creating a critical mass politically. And without people working on it politically, there are certain things that we just can't do, certain regulations we just can't do on our own. And then finally, redefining the ordinary is synonymous with redefining the sacred. Okay, I gotta get some involvement here. I feel like I'm talking too much. What is a good definition of sacred?
Holy.
Holy. Okay.
Some people would also define it as set aside.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It is, because other people would define everything as sacred.
Yeah. Okay. Very, very interesting. I think that's going to come into play later on. What about the ordinary? We talked a little bit about this yesterday. What's a good definition? Snapshot. Knee-jerk definition of ordinary.
Everyday.
Everyday? Yeah. Somebody said steady state or like, you know, getting by or getting through the day, every day.
The norm.
Thank you. The norm. That's a good one. Not to be confused with business as usual, right? Because we can be doing an ordinary life and being very faithful. And taking care of the earth, taking care of our neighbor. Okay. So, go ahead.
Both of those terms, I think, depend on the individual.
Yes.
Because we all, you know, what I would consider to be ordinary is somebody else may consider to be extraordinary, and the same goes with sacred.
Right.
So it's really a tough one to get your arms around.
It is.
You know, expectations. What are your expectations? Well, it's ordinary. Well, you're expecting it to be extraordinary.
Right. Yeah. The ordinary, that's literally why I'm obsessed with that. Obsessed, I'm just a little bit strong. But I'm really interested in the difference between extraordinary and ordinary, because I really don't think there is any difference. One person's extraordinary is another person's ordinary. And so how you frame something to someone, how you tell the story, will make the ordinary extraordinary, and then maybe that'll help get them into a situation where they can see themselves. The sacred, we're going to pick that one. We're going to pick both those apart, but definitely sacred.
I also think it's the moment, whether it's ordinary or sacred.
Oh. So it's...
in the moment.
Whatever. Okay, so I'm going to try to understand what you're saying here. Like, whatever you're going through in that moment makes it sacred, mm-hmm. or whatever the conditions are in your environment.
Yeah, maybe in the ordinary you stopped and took a different look and it became sacred. I mean, it's...
Sure. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Is it the Robert Frost poem, like the road less traveled, like in it, that took that one and it made all the difference, you know, along those lines. So this is the abbreviated logo. I didn't talk about the logo before. I didn't want to double up too much, but this is the abbreviated logo for Sacred Parts Project. And here I talked about the Trinity a little bit yesterday, but this would be a Christian way of looking at this. I like to keep it a little bit not in your face Christian. You see any evidences of the Trinity in here? I'm a big fan of the Trinity. This would be the Creator. This might be the cross here, being the Redeemer, the Son, the Holy Spirit. This might be us. This might be us. We're called to go out. So faith, nature, and sustainability. We talked about, and I'm just going to breeze through these because we spent a lot of time talking about this yesterday. Psalm 121, we got to get past verse 1 into verse 2. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? Verse 1. Verse 2, my help comes from the Lord, the creator of heaven and earth. Divine speeches of Job, touched about that with the alligator in the Everglades. John 3:16, we will not save what we do not love. That's the flip side of that verse. And if God doesn't say what God doesn't love, we won't either. And we're called to do God's bidding. We are created in the image of God. Okay, this is just the fancy pictures. Sustainability, recycling. This is actually my drill in my old air conditioner that we're kaput that I brought to Best Buy. Does everybody know that you can take your electronics that don't work to Best Buy? You know that? Okay, they'll recycle them for you. So, I mean, if you're looking for a quick fix and you want to get rid of your old AC, you can take it to Best Buy and they'll make it disappear and recycle it. So, that's good to know. Okay, so I want to split up into three groups, and we're gonna actually look at faith, nature, and sustainability from a real, like, high level. I mean, when I say high level, I mean like 3,000 feet above the ground Bible study. We won't get into the Greek necessarily. We're going to get into how you hear these texts speak to you. Bible, an action, and a concept. Okay. We should reconvene now to discuss our scholarly findings. Okay, so I hope I got all these right, but I took the liberty of just creating a matrix for us and putting your group number next to them so you can see how they fit. I wanted to make sure that everybody had a Bible verse and that each concept had a Bible verse and action and concept, or each category, thank you. So, what did group one come up with as far as faith and the Bible reading, these two Bible readings? Anyone from group one want to?
Well, one thing that struck our group is interesting, comparing the Isaiah and Mark. There's a statement in there that's very similar, punctuation slightly different. And in Isaiah, it goes, "A voice cries out," and quotation begins, "In the wilderness prepare the way of the Lord." And in Mark, you have John and Jesus, and the messages, the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, preparing the way of the Lord.
Right.
And it really made us stop and think about what was the wilderness and what one person's ordinary, commonplace, maybe another's wilderness. But there's that call to action in Isaiah to go to the wilderness.
That's right.
And prepare there. And we have Mark, we have John, John and Jesus going to the wilderness.
Exactly. Oftentimes people see Isaiah as sort of a precursor to Jesus, or, you know, a lot of the stuff that's in Isaiah is a precursor to Jesus' time. But I think you hit the sweet spot right on the nose, and that is these two verses, verse 3 and verse 3. And also what I find interesting is these passages are both 1 through 15, and verse 3 is like the center of that. And really, what you pointed out is that in Isaiah it says, "A voice cries out, colon, in the wilderness prepare the way of the Lord." And what I always heard was, "A voice cries out in the wilderness, comma, prepare the way of the Lord." And so if you see those differences, now you're seeing, where do we start seeing the message, the way of the Lord? We start in the wilderness, according to Isaiah. So we have both. And there's a reason why God has given us many different lenses to see the same truths. But that's a powerful connection that you just made. How about the biblical folks for nature? The Genesis accounts. You guys are group two, or group three, correct?
Yes,
yeah.
Group three. And, the biblical?
Did you get to the biblical stuff?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
We looked at those two Genesis chapters. One had to do with, they're both on, like you say, on creation,
mm-hmm.
one version. The first one is God's creating the earth and everything. And the second one is when he creates man, is that it? Adam, out of the dirt.
You're right. There's two different Genesis 1 through 2:4 is considered the Yahwist, and there's the Yahwist and the priestly, and what that means essentially, the Yahwist is typically sort of a big picture from all of creation standpoint. I'm grossly simplifying this, but the Yahwist walks you straight through the beginning of the cosmos all the way till the creation of humankind. So you're seeing, you know, everything set. And the first thing that's created is not human. Okay, it's the last. So you can kind of play with that some too. But in Genesis 2:5-25, instead of spending all this time on creation and then getting to humankind, the priestly version kind of breezes through everything and goes right to humankind and spends more time on sort of, you know, creating out of the soil and what that means. And eventually the priestly writer is going to go into Adam and Eve, and then it breaks up into all kinds of different authors and scholars think. But those two are solidly, the first one is solidly the Yahwist, and the second one is solidly priestly, and they just have different ideas. The priestly would tend to lead us in that direction of thinking, oh, you know, we are kind of at the top of the food chain, you know. That's one way of looking at it. But the Yahwist, at the tail end of the Genesis 1 through 2:4, I believe, I have to double check this, talks about humankind having dominion, okay? And there's this big thing in the ecological circle in the faith community that says what the difference between dominion and domination is the difference between thinking we're at the top of the food chain and we're part of the whole piece, or part of the whole earth. And so if you're looking at that, that's sort of the sweet spot of that comparison when we talk about nature and how we're looking at it. One is humankind sort of as part of this whole, and the other is sort of the crown. And that's partly our interpretation, to be fair, the crown of creation. What about the Bible stuff with sustainability? Ezekiel and Revelation. Did you guys get to that yet?
No.
Okay.
We just read Ezekiel.
Fair enough. Well, and we're trying to do a lot here, so I'll just summarize it quickly by saying Barb Rossing talks about Revelation 22, the river of life. This is a great passage, and it really does reframe Revelation. It's not this scary, spooky book of the Bible, because it ends with creation being restored. And that's not scary to me. But we think about all the stuff in the middle, and that is scary. But Ezekiel does the same thing. So I would encourage you, when you get a moment in your contemplative reading of the Bible, is to check out 47 chapter of Ezekiel. It is crazy similar to Revelation 22. Hundreds of years apart in their writing, but very, very similar. This new river of life comes out of the temple. And even it's an allegory, but it comes out of the church, or it comes out of the body of Christ. So we're recontextualizing as Christians this Hebrew text. But I think that those two are kind of in parallel. What about some of these sort of more esoteric questions? Action and concept. Group. Let's start with group two on faith. Justice. Yeah, justice and community.
Well, these are weigh in if I'm summarizing wrong, but someone brought up the idea that a pastor there says if we're, you know, there's people, faithful people that are so heavenly bound that they're no earthly good,
uh-huh,
because their focus is on sort of.
No, so and his point is that some Christians become so focused on heaven that their focus is as far as taking care of neighbor,
right,
taking care of the environment, that's
right,
not important to them.
Right.
So and
yeah,
the gospel, Jesus, he talks about a lot about
yeah,
taking care of neighbor.
Absolutely. I mean, what are the two central commandments? Love God with everything you've got and love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, that's it. And when you think of creation and other creatures being your neighbor, now suddenly you're on the hook.
Yeah.
I mean, not just, you know. So what I think you're getting at is sort of the dispensationalism of the folks that say, hey, listen, if I'm saved, I'm good. forget about the earth. If the earth is basically a styrofoam cup that I'm going to throw away.
Yeah.
When we're done with it.
Yeah.
Because we'll get a new one.
Heaven.
Right.
We'll get a new one. Why do I need to take care of the earth?
Right.
I'm going to heaven.
That's right. That's right. So, unfortunately, so that's right on. Unfortunately, for the rest of these categories, let's rely on whoever's got the burning desire to say something, and then we'll just keep moving. Unfortunately, we're a little bit out of time. We're getting out of time. Anybody have any insights that they think are just, they just want to throw out there?
You were talking about what you just said about Jesus said, love God first, and then your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I just, all of a sudden it struck me, the Ten Commandments don't contain anything about how to save the earth, do they? They talk
Fair
about
enough.
Morality, about people,
right.
Like,
right.
Don't covet your neighbor's goods and things like that.
This is true. In Christ there is a new creation. So that we're kind of we're using bookends as the Old Testament laws and the New Testament gospel to sort of bring us peace, but there are ways to tease out from the commandments, you know, do not kill, you know, and things like that. But you're right. I mean, there's some real good food for thought in there. Law and the gospel is a good 1-2 punch for this. So for this, I started using sort of a systematic way of looking at these categories. Out of the wilderness, and I'm focusing really on the stuff that group one was talking about with Mark 1 and Isaiah. Out of the wilderness of blank. Out of the wilderness of faith comes. And then I kind of broke it down into, for the general to the specific. So we talked about the sense of adventure, hope, life, survival in the wilderness, what it's like to be out in the wilderness, surviving in a backcountry type setting. Taking that into your life, taking that into what is faith, sort of in a traditional sense, spirituality, religion, and community, and then right down to the very specific. And I forget who was saying it, was that the sacred is whatever that moment contains. And then for nature, out of the wilderness of nature, one of the little slogans we like to talk about at Sacred Parks is letting the outdoors in. Letting what you experience in the outdoors into the indoors, into your life, into the way that you live. Setting, which would include setting aside time and place. And Bill left, but his definition of sacred was something that is set aside. And that's where the parks come into. And I put an asterisk by there because parks could be your backyard. I mean, it could be Holden Village. But in the particular arena that I focused on in the beginning was national, state, local parks, because they have been set aside. And the beauty of them is they are no one's and everyone's at the same time. So they are set aside for, they're sacred. They're very sacred places. And national parks, there are national parks all over the world. We're not the only ones that have them. And I would go so far as to say a natural park is a cathedral in certain ways. Sustainability, kind of broke that one down. Out of the wilderness of sustainability comes learning how to adapt to your surroundings together. Okay, it's one thing to survive out of the wilderness by yourself, which I don't always recommend. But it's another thing to say, how are we going to treat this place, this city, this state, this country, this world, as if we are all backpacking through this together. So we're gonna conserve our water. We're gonna make sure we've got enough food. Okay, this is what happens on a backcountry trip. And then Christology from above and below, you and us. I was gonna tell you a story, but essentially, when I was in seminary, I was in a Christology class, and we had this big debate about Christology. Is Jesus divine, 100% divine, and 100% human? Of course we know that's true, right, according to our theology. But on my final exam, I had to say, well, pick one, and argue that Jesus is more divine or more human. And, you know, we're supposed to write this page's worth of stuff for this final exam. And this is years ago, and I had a little bit more brashness, and I wrote, I cannot do this because Jesus is 100% human, 100% divine, and that was it. So I get a a C, I think, on that. But anyway, that was my argument. But the point of this is that it's an effort that comes from below, and it's an effort that comes from above. I got a B+ in the class, so I'm not too worried about it. But anyway, in order to really get an A for this, we really do need to do grassroots stuff and then encourage the people that we know. There's people in this very camp who are already on board, and if they weren't, we should be petitioning them, state senators and others. Look, this is an issue that needs to be tackled from the top and from the bottom. So my question to you is, what is your project? I mean, of course, this Sacred Parks project. What is yours? What are the ways where you can create something that addresses something that's bigger than you in a way that is bigger than just your effort? What is your project? What is your community doing about this? What are Sacred Parks' projects, or the Sacred Parks projects? We've done a few things. This is just a little bit of what we've done. We lead in Chicago, and now I guess in Michigan, where I'm going to be called to be a pastor. Hopefully we're going to get this started again there. But faith-centered hiking and camping. We had a National Parks ranger from Yellowstone, a seasonal ranger. She would go into some of the state parks and municipal parks and lead what we called hiking by faith. And so she would get to know the wildlife, and she would talk about them, and in ways that she couldn't when she was a national park ranger, she could actually break that barrier and talk about God, which was awesome for her. She loved that. And then the times when we had the devotions, I was sort of the pastor of the group. So we try to do that. We try to bring people out in the wilderness. We do activities to talk about preservation, conservation, love of creation, and action. And this is just an old picture of a few people getting across the stream. We always like that one. We have some neighborhood programs. We're just getting this off the ground. It's called 3-in-1, Back to the Trinity. Like I said, I'm a nut for the Trinity. But the 3-in-1 is encouraging an organization. I think it's possible for some of us to do this, to encourage organizations, whether they are apartment landlords, churches, local businesses, encouraging them to do something to go green. I mean, something small. We helped buy a couple of 44-gallon recycled containers for this restaurant in Chicago, Rockin' Taco. And in exchange, we asked them to recycle, for one, and also to you talk about how parks have affected them and the places that are set aside, and then hopefully for those three groups to pick one, this is where the one comes in, one park where they can get together to help clean up, or maybe even have a devotional service that we would lead or they would lead. Something to create relationship, starting small, a couple recycle bins, helping them out with picking up the cans every now and then. And the third thing we're trying to do is create a workbook for some of the stuff that we talk about here. We're going to talk a little bit more about water. We're running out of time, but that's one of the things that we're going to have in our workbook. Things that will allow people to go into the wilderness, and when they're looking at that stream that's going by them, to talk about, have a devotion, or talk about ways of conserving that, trying to reframe their experience in the wilderness back home. So those are the three things that the Sacred Parks Project is trying to do. This is one of the things we did on one of our Hiking by Faith. And we did this today at the Eye Opener, 7:15 this morning. We got a bunch of different containers, and we had a big container of water at one end and a big container of no water at the other. And we did three runs. The first run was all the water has to get from one can to one canister to the other. No rules. But you got to do it in 30 seconds. So they would literally just pour from one tub to the other and bypass everybody in the middle. The second one was, okay, the water has to pass through in some way, shape, or form every container along the way. And you, then you got a minute, and you lose a lot of water. Because people didn't know how to do it, they only had a few seconds to figure it out. And then the last one is, it has to, the water has to pass through every single cup to get from the big bucket full of water to the empty bucket at the end, and you have all the time that you need. And all the water gets there, and all the water has to, and so you're slowing down. And part of the ethos of the project is to try to get people to slow down. Think about how they're using the resources and cooperate and share. So what are we going to do about it? Tomorrow we're going to talk about Leave No Trace. We're going to have an awareness course. And I'm hoping that we can get awareness course certificates printed out for you at the end of the session. I mean, not tomorrow, but when I get back to Chicago, to print out some certification certificates for you. But it's a one-hour awareness course. We talk about all the principles of Leave No Trace. And we think Leave No Trace is such a huge step towards living more simple, aware life. And then, we have these every session. Our many-layered, not, sort of like many-colored, many-layered Desert Mountain Moment. And this is from the book that we're going to talk about on Thursday. Just want to read you a short quote. From Belden Lane's The Solace of Fierce Landscapes. We're going to look at chapter 2 of this book. It's in the bookstore, by the way, just in case you wanted to check it out. Desert and mountain places are often associated with the limit experiences of people on the edge. People who have run out of language in speaking of God. People whose recourse to fierce landscapes has fed some deep need within them for the abandonment of control and the acceptance of God's love and absolute unmitigated grace. So, basically leaving you with that quote. Friday, we're venturing beyond your park self, which is an acronym, and that's just a self over there who looks like me. And that's it. So thank you for being here, and go in peace.